Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And as we go through the Constitution, as you become more and more literate regarding the Constitution, as we all become more literate, every time I, you know, read, as a matter of fact, this time, let me just share this with you. The fact that I actually have Paul reading the Constitution with me and going through, the violations and so forth, as we found out in one of the cases, the violation that we were looking at was something that was, I'll just say, was established or was identified by John Rowland of the Constitution Society. And so, I kind of inherited this and I've updated it. And as I looked at, I believe it was ex post and, taxes on exports. And as I started looking at it, I mean, there was the, some of the obvious things that, as we started looking, really, the concept behind taxation was that the federal government was to tax the states based on apportionment so that there would be an equal burden across the board between one state's population and another state's population. Now, one of the things they argued about was how to do the taxation. And it became very clear that they had to do it based on apportionment or based on persons, just due to the fact that you could have a state that, was tremendous, like Alaska, that if you established a criteria that taxed based on the area, by the square mile, then a state that didn't have the same amount of people would be, crushed. Those people, the burden of taxation, in contrast to Rhode Island, or a heavily populated state. Can you imagine the burden that would be carried by the individual citizens of Alaska if they were apportioning taxation based on square miles? And so anyway, as I go through this, it gives me an opportunity to think theoretically about, how the government can apply taxes, direct, indirect, and so forth, and can it actually tax exports? Can it actually tax the goods? Well, with the concept that the state was actually being taxed by person, then there was no double taxes in that method, in that methodology. With the concept of taxing incomes, if you have a company's income and you're the owner of the company and you have your own income, then you're literally paying a double tax. So the reason why the 16th Amendment, and so as I was going through that, I could see that the real violation of that particular part of the Constitution was being driven by the 16th Amendment, where the 16th Amendment claimed to only change this one part of the Constitution and had a rippling effect over other things that literally forced the federal government to go beyond its other constraints that were placed upon it, such as taxing exports or taxing goods themselves. Because when they started taxing corporations, as Paul pointed out, then that became a direct tax on the services or goods of that company itself. And it forced that to be passed on to the, ends up, inflating costs. But this is what happens when government becomes insatiable regarding, money. Give us more money. So this really was driven not by necessarily the 16th Amendment. Taxation is a byproduct of tyranny of the, I'll just say, of the wallet. In other words, when the government decides to go into the wallet to spend money on things it has no authority to spend on, then it needs to tax you more. And so it then applies that, the tyranny of spending, into the tyranny of taxation. But you only care about the tyranny of taxation. We have, you know, you want to stop the taxation? You want to go back? You want to undo the need for even the 16th Amendment? We have to get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. And you're going to have to shift those taxation responsibilities closer to home. So you really want some of these services, then you need to shift it from the federal government to the states and from the states to your county. As we start taking back government, I think people are going to start learning the lesson that we're better off allowing other entities and organisms, such as churches, community, you know, centers and so forth, to do some of the work that the government is stepping in to do. And so this kind of lends to the need for, you know, some of the other books or at least discussions that we all need to have on how do we actually get, you know, once we get government back into the bottle, once we get the genie back in the bottle, then what are we going to do? I had a conversation about this with the guy's name is Jim. And he's with Feds for Freedom. And we recorded a conversation. I think it was yesterday. And as I went through the Constitution with him, he was just absolutely amazed. Hold on, you're telling me something I didn't know. I didn't hear that. And which speaks to what I've been saying about literacy and the Constitution. But as we were discussing, you know, the problem of government doing things it has no authority to do, he kind of said, "Hold, you know, this becomes a problem because a lot of the people that he knows and works with are within government," and said, "Hey, you know, these guys work for that department, like the Department of Transportation. They're not going to like to hear the fact that their whole employment, their retirement scheme, everything has been, you know, fraudulently done. They're not going to like that." And I said, "Well, it's about moving cheese." And I recommended reading the book, Who Moved My Cheese? It's a very simple, it's almost a book that kids can get. And, kid, you know, it's written for kids. It's written down to that level. And it really helps people understand and see what the heck, you know, happens when all of a sudden things change. And my point to him was, do you believe that we're not going to drive cars on roads and we're not going to fly to our destinations? We're not going to use our modes of transportation that is falling underneath this umbrella called the Department of Transportation? Well, no. And I said, so what will happen is the federal government will no longer administrate that. And that means that the states will have to pick that up, which means there'll be a realignment. And what probably will happen is instead of having this huge bureaucracy, the states will be forced to streamline. The states will be forced, because, you know, you're actually taking, you know, all of this bureaucracy from the federal government out to the states. And each state may have different needs, you know, in coordinating and managing and working together, but bottom line, and they'll have to come up with a way of setting their own standards amongst the states. They can't come up with 50 standards. And the last thing we want to do is have the federal government establishing standards. Why? And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. They have no interest in seeking what is best for we the people and the republic. What the federal government does is they're basically placating what needs to happen to move America into the globalist agenda. This is why, folks, you're seeing roundabouts being deployed everywhere, just like it's being deployed throughout Europe, England, and so forth, so that it can control traffic. The day that you the days are coming to an end where you'll be able to get on a road and literally, you know, get out of Dodge quickly. You have to go through roundabouts, which will control your rate of speed, your rate of travel, and so forth. And it's all about traffic. Go look up traffic calming. That is the doctrine that they have deployed. And where in the Constitution is traffic calming? See, my friends, that when we're talking about these types of actions, these types of decisions, it's not what's best. As a matter of fact, when it comes to transportation, when it comes to you getting in your car and getting to your destination, the more efficient, the faster you get there, the better off we are all in society, because you become more productive. We want people to be at their optimum productivity. Why would we institute things that would slow us down? Oh, for safety and for health. You know what? It's been proven that speed limits actually don't improve safety. As a matter of fact, these camera lights that, you know, you run a red or what have you, they have caused more accidents and more harm than not having the lights at all. So why are they doing this? Because it's about revenue. It's another form of tax. And the states have been going along with this because they have a little bit of a windfall from playing along with the bureaucracy, because the bureaucracy becomes the bad guy. And the states, we have to enforce the law. I mean, it's almost like what we were hearing out of the Biden administration. Well, you want us to abide by the law? We're abiding by the law now. And I'm going, which is a whole nother issue. But anyway, there's a lot I wanted to go through, and we probably need to cover. And again, it's Feedback Friday, but there's just been a lot of stuff. And the feedback I'm getting is that, you know, wow, I didn't understand the Constitution. This is not uncommon. You're not alone. And there's probably no more important content than understanding the Constitution and going through these fundamental documents. The ratification debates, the Constitution itself, and the ratification debates, which explains the Constitution. Now, we did a little backwards because at the point in time of the Constitution Day, being in September, we get to be kind of in a rush to, you know, carry through the holidays and some of the other events. And the best time to go through the ratification debates is usually springtime and going into the doldrums of summer, and, you know, so that we can just kind of plow through where we don't have, you know, the elections coming up, because the fall is usually election seasons and so forth. But anyway, there is a lot of news. As a matter of fact, I was pinged by Harry the Greek. He's actually put up some pretty good information regarding Atlanta. There's a court in Atlanta that has basically sued or subpoenaed information out of the Los Angeles District Court regarding the Kinect data and so forth. And so I would go to, Well, let me look it up real quick because I've got it right here. And it is newsothersmiss.com. Sorry for the delay. Newsothersmiss.com. That's Harry the Greek's page. Go look at some of the new articles he's posted, because there is data, there is information that is going to be presented in Atlanta. So believe it or not, Georgia is really kind of, you know, hot in the election accountability. But let's take a real pause real quick and say, how long has it taken? How fast are the wheels of justice? Now, look at Trump. Trump is actually sitting in front of the judge, and that trial is moving forward because it has become paramount to the progressives to create this public relations campaign in trying to make Trump look bad. Well, how long has it been since the 2020 election? where our election was stolen by technology, and how Harry the Greek and a lot of other people have been really exposing all of this stuff. I mean, we're looking at 2-3 years now. We're coming up on 3 years after 2020. We still have not had a case go all the way through to where we're getting clear verdicts and restoring our election system. Why are the wheels of justice running so slow? Because they want to, you know, maintain this ambiguity. They want to push us down this agenda. You know, it's unconscionable. It's unconscionable to think that your parents, you know, the ones that, you know, created you, and there are parents out there that are, you know, this evil, but it's just unconscionable to think that we would have parents that would want to kill their children. Now, we have been completely, I'll just say, desensitized with this concept of abortion, that, you know, that's okay. It's not okay. But we've been desensitized. We've been programmed to look at life as less. It's not that important, because that's the whole point of godlessness, that life, well, you know, you're just another cog, you know, in the wheel. That's all. I mean, you know, we're born, we die, and that's it. If you don't believe in God, if you don't look at the grander scheme, and this is an indictment of how far we have gone in accepting the BS that they've been ramming down our throats for years and years and years. And you can't tell me that this isn't effective. You can't tell me that what they're teaching in the daily school agenda isn't overwhelming your children today, to where even if you're taking them to Sunday school, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school is overwhelming them. And I hate to say this, but we have lost the ability to influence and direct our future because of the power that the education system is wielding, which means that we're going to have to do an education petition. We need your help. If you're involved in an organization that's really passionate about education, stopping critical race theory, and so forth, then call us, work with us, let us know. We will help, and we will want to go through creating a good, thorough petition. The medical freedom petition is getting ready to come out. What we want to do is we want to become a national repository of constitutional petitions that everybody can just come in and grab, put under their arm, and actually start driving these issues in your county. By the way, the Why Counties Matter Most, that article has been completed, and it's in the process of a final, you know, As I put it out to a select group of people, this was my penultimate draft. And now we're, you know, getting the feedback, the editing, and there's some things I'm going to add to it that, you know, will help kind of connect the dots, because that's the important part. You know, it's not just about presenting the facts, but helping to connect the dots so that we all can conclude that this is what we have to do. Now, I have a lot of people that, you know, have really good ideas, whether that's, you know, creating education programs for kids to actually get engaged in learning, and which is the right thing to do. But let's figure out what they need to learn and make sure that we have a curriculum for them to do that. Let's look at, you know, some of these other solutions, some of these other things that people, you know, want to put on the table. But the most important thing right now is to start putting the pressure on your counties to wake the people up, to restore your county government within your state. Why is that critical? Because the counties are the parties to your state constitution. This article proves this, and this article kind of shows how they are the building blocks of our entire government system. Because when you look at the one government you create, that we, the people, actually get together and tangibly form, I mean, we create this tangible government that we touch, we're intimately involved in, that is only the county. That when it comes to creating a state government, the counties select a group of delegates from all of the counties, and they come together representing all of the county interests. So you kind of lose your input, and you kind of lose a little bit of that control. And so, like you do over your government, your local county government. And then when it came to the federal government, that control was done even more remotely because there was just a few delegates from each state in that constitutional convention. We kind of go through all of this, but in a world and in a paradigm that we the people institute our government, that one government we institute is the county government. And the whole point, and as a matter of fact, Madison talks about the importance, and he lays out the criteria, or I should say the hierarchy, that the authority of government comes from the Constitution, and the authority of the Constitution comes from we the people, which is why every county should have its own constitution. And every county should have a constitution that is modeled after the federal constitution, where you are forming a government that has an executive, a legislative, as well as a judiciary, especially if you have the population to do that. If you don't have the population to do that, which I think you do, I can't think of a condition where you just wouldn't have that. And it may be more voluntary. It may be more of people just being involved with a little bit of compensation. Because, folks, just remember, our government isn't supposed to make us rich. But when we have a good, effective government at a certain point and a certain level, then the salary, the pay, needs to be adequate for the work that's being done. I mean, it's a sad day when you see your state legislator make less money than some of the legal clerks that work in the state. Are you kidding me? Or working in the legal clerks working in the big firms? They should at least, I mean, they're creating the laws that will have to be enforced. So having those guys that are qualified, that are worth that money, is important. This is why we have such crappy government. This is why the majority of all state legislatures in this nation do not make laws, because they just don't know how. And that's a pathetic condition. Because legislative powers are vested to these guys, and we're voting people in that aren't qualified. And again, this is like a self-licking ice cream cone problem. It's a catch-22. You know, if you're not going to pay the people a decent salary, then there's no desire to go in and do that work. Anyway, so we really need to start looking, as you start creating your county, you need to look at the big picture of what government should cost and what it needs to do. And let's keep it contained, because a contained government is a land of liberty. Now, there's a lot of other little things I want to go through. We're going to be going into the break in just less than a minute. But one of the things I wanted to go into, and I'll just start off with this one, is I told you Dianne Feinstein's death was not going to bode well. As a matter of fact, I predicted that whoever replaced her would be far worse. And tell me how I'm wrong. Tell me how, is it the only reason she was able to hold on and, you know, and grasp what she had been doing was because she was such a stalwart. She was bought and sold by the globalists of the world, and she was such a good steward. She was such a good servant of the globalists. They allowed her to maintain that seat, and that's how it goes. Now we've got even a worse globalist that's awoke, I mean, even beyond. I mean, Feinstein had her limitations. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
You know, so as I was just saying with Feinstein, you know, she lived in a time where, you know, she could not see. I mean, she was she was probably very reserved and not an advocate for, you know, the transgender movement and so forth. I mean, she supported it because she was told to. But, I mean, she wasn't a diehard. She wasn't a greenie, other than the fact that, you know, she was told to support it. And it was a mechanism for her to make her millions of dollars. We need a full investigation. We need justice, but we need to take back government first. The problem is we can't do it all at once. We have to, with the first and foremost, we have to take the authority back. We have to take the authority back. We have to take the authority back at the counties so that we can take the authority back at the states. Once we take the authority back at the states, then we can actually take the authority back at the federal government. We can start actually obtaining full compliance to our Constitution, actually living in a Republican form of government, once again, by the rule of law. That's what it's all about, folks. And I couldn't connect the dots any more simplistic than that. So as I look at this institution called the World Economic Forum, and my very first view of the World Economic Forum was It was the World Forum. I think it was called the World Forum. It wasn't the World Economic Forum. It was in 1984. It was in Vail, Colorado. And former President Gerald Ford was the host with Kissinger and a bunch of other people in the World Forum. And this was the precursor. This was not a subordinate or secondary polity that the UN had created. What this was this is the world banks, this was the world corporations, and world government kind of coming together and figuring out how to start working together to basically seize control of governments and the people. And so, you know, they were actually doing this, I want to say, out in the open. I mean, people kind of knew what was going on, but it was very exclusive. And it was one of those things that I happened to trip into because I was in the Marine Corps at the time, and I happened to be involved in the transportation and so forth for this event. And the few Marines that I was with going through that, supporting that event in Vail, Colorado, we had no idea what the heck was going on. We was just like, wow, look at all the power here. Boy, just drop a bomb here and you know, all of these world leaders would be dead. And look at how far they've gotten. And now we see this thing, this entity that they have actually spawned called the World Economic Forum. And the World Economic Forum, more and more people are, you know, WEF, they're becoming very familiar with this governing body that has no representation. It is not, it's not constitutional. It shouldn't even exist on American soil. And yet it's driving policies. It's driving the Agenda 21. It's driving the Agenda 3030, whatever you want to call it today. It is driving this global governance. And it's literally spanning out and directing your counties and what needs to happen. And what I'm here to tell you is that this is just another entity seeking power to destroy us. As I was basically going to say, and I wanted to get into this, it is unconscionable to think that a parent would really want to try to kill their children. But we see that there have been those evil parents that, you know, didn't want to have a kid, and they were okay with killing or, you know, abusing or what have you. Well, it's equally unconscionable, folks, for a representative government, when we have a self-government system where we allow our government to get into a position to actually conduct warfare and to actually try to kill us. The vaccinations, the chemtrails, look at everything our government is executing, and it's they're working at breakneck speed to kill as many people and to set up the next crisis against us. What the heck is... Okay, so I would like to get people to actually, you know, recognize that now is the time, right? It's now or never, because it's only getting worse. We can spend a lot of time in educating, but the most important thing we can do right now is educating people on the violations. It's nice to get the next generation educated and informed. Believe you me, they'll come along. As a matter of fact, one of the things I kind of tell people is that when we really start talking and educating directly on what the problem is, the root of the problem, and what has to be done, it doesn't take long for people to get it. It's like cancer education. You know, everybody, wow, you got cancer, that's going to kill you. And so people, you know, they start learning, you know, what are your odds? What are the treatments? What can you do? And, you know, quickly they come to this cancer education. Go, oh, okay, so you need to have that removed. You need to go through this, that, you know, and a lot of that stuff that they do regarding cancer is actually just as bad as the disease is. So it's no wonder where people, you know, that have been diagnosed and fought cancer, gone through chemo and all these other things, have all sorts of other health problems. It has not been over the past several decades, thanks to, you know, seeing some of this stuff or hearing some of this stuff from Cynthia. I actually hear, you know, how our medical system, you know, and this goes all the way back to the Fabian Society, when the Fabian Society came to America and penetrated our education system in the 1880s, you know, the die was cast. America was on its way to slowly, you know, moving towards boiling the frog. I mean, you know, we got all the water and all the frogs in the pot, and we've got the, you know, the burner on, and it's slowly cooking us. And we're now coming to a point where we're about ready to start a rolling boil. And we still have the opportunity. The water is not boiling yet. We can still get out of this. I'm convinced we can still get out of this, but we have to take back and we have to educate. We have to use petitions and help everybody see. This is why these petitions are such detailed, you know, documents. We go through precisely how the history and everything else so that it becomes an irrefutable argument that they're doing something they have no business doing. Which is also why, you know, many of our petitions reference other petitions. Because in one petition, we create the case that the federal court has no power to create law. They can't even interpret the law and redefine it. If the existing definition is not suitable or, you know, is not sufficient to resolve the case, then they should remand the case to Congress and the parties to say, this is something you'll have to resolve. And actually, that would be the teamwork way to do it. But, oh, no, no, no. The courts, they're the one-stop shop. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I mean, these are the principles that I'm throwing and have thrown into this why counties matter most, why we can't allow the courts to have that kind of power, because any person that has that kind of power, they will abuse it. History proves this. It's not just the individual. It's the group of individuals. I've actually sat in groups where they've actually gone down that path of saying, well, we're going to have to assume more power. No, you can't do that. Why do we have to be, you know, that voice of reason when people are so prone to doing things that they're not supposed to do? Because I don't want to say it's human nature. I honestly believe it is that evil influence that we just seem to be so susceptible to. Folks, no one's perfect. We all have our flaws. We all have, you know, things that, you know, this is why Christ died for us. But the fact is that we have to be cognizant that we are people. We are fallible. We do need, you know, to be that voice of reason. We need to always keep people cognizant of the high road, the high ground of what we need to do. What's going on our borders this is becoming, you know, laughable. It is so pathetic. It is almost, you know, it's almost accepting our death laughable. That's what I mean. It's not funny. But what do you do when you realize you're going to be crushed? You can cry, or you can just laugh and go, well, I'm here. I did it to myself. I could have stopped it. We all have our own way of reacting. And I'm just saying that, you know, for some, it may be laughable. For others, it may be the gnashing of teeth. Whatever, you know, however you want to express yourself, this invasion on our southern border is nothing other than an invasion. And the Constitution clearly dictates what has to happen. And nobody, this is why every single one of your people in Congress, every single one of them in the Senate and the House of Representatives has failed us, failed you. The other point that I wanted to get, there's a few, actually, let me get into a couple more points, and let me see, I've got 15 minutes, let me see if I can get through these, because I think I can. Now, at the beginning of the year, because this kind of came back around, and I had a little side conversation about the parties and the maniacalness of the parties, and I made the argument at the beginning of the year, tell me that the parties do not have control over our government. Oh, no, no. Well, it actually came true, because how long did it take before government could even start acting? Because the party of power, the Republicans, couldn't seize the power. Apparently, they have to have their power, and they have to seize it. And the whole nation was at a standstill until they could establish the Speaker of the House. And now we're back. And now the party is proving once again that, and it's not just the Republican Party, it's both parties. This dichotomy exists because they demand it. Because that's how they will control us. They demand in controlling us, and they are the ones that will control us. One of the things that also happened in the news, and this is something that I actually got from Need to Know News from G. Edward Griffin. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the World War I story of what happened to France and why France, literally capitulated. And there's really some good, funny books and funny, you know, dialogues, like Monty Python makes fun of the French because as soon as the German comes over the hill and you know, it's just a little girl, you know, they don't realize that. They just notice that it's a German. And the next thing you know, they're on their knees cowering. And then this little girl, you know, walking a little doggy, a puppy, you know, strolls by. Okay, I guess that they weren't coming to invade. And so there's that type of metaphoric imagery out there that there were these two Jewish professors that were basically leading the French nation after World War I, that it was better to capitulate to Germany than ever have to fight again. Because they knew it was probably inevitable that they were going to fight again, especially when you realize that Germany was given the out to, you know, pay on their printed dollars, the marks, and that's exactly what Germany did. They basically created a financial crisis to pay their debt off, and then they started building the Third Reich and so forth. So these scholars, these academics, and Thomas Sowell, he talks about this. I think it's in Intellectuals in Society. Excellent book. He talks about these two guys and how they convinced the German people that they were better off speaking German than ever, you know, trying to fight a war again because the cost to France was staggering. They lost so many people in World War I. And so they said, you know, this is what we got to do. Well, this is called, it's called karma, right? So because these people, you know, got everybody to buy in, these two people got everybody to buy into capitulating, that they had no idea that the real victim of Germany would be the Jews. And both of these guys were Jews. And as soon as the Germans came, and by this point in time, Germany had already started going after and rounding up the Jews. These guys started going into hiding, and they were both caught, and they were both killed. Well, there's something kind of similar that's just happened, and this basically happened, I think, in Pennsylvania, and I forget the other place, but there's a Josh Krueger, who I guess is a journalist, who has been undermining and, you know, playing down this crime is out of control type of stuff. Part of the woke, well, he actually suffered. I believe he got killed. If he didn't, he was definitely hurt, but he became a victim of this needless crime as his house was invaded. Ryan Carson is another one that was out there doing something very similar. And both of these guys have basically downplayed and obfuscated the real danger out of control crime and not enforcing the laws. See, folks, I'm here telling you that we have to force and ensure full compliance to the law, full compliance to the Constitution. In a republic, the law is king. And so you get that out of my latest article, and it's for free. And as soon as I get it posted, you're more than welcome to download it. It's a long article, but it's academic, and I make the case that we actually must force, you know, the restoring our counties in our form of government and taking back our Republican form of government. So the wokeness is so out of control that even just another thing that just happened recently, Shelline Rodriguez, a New York City college professor, was the one that held a machete to a New York Post reporter's neck and threatened to chop him, take his head off. Well, she just was arraigned and went through court and avoided a jail sentence with a sweetheart plea deal because she's a champion for the left. In other words, there are people that are not susceptible to the rule of law. And anybody that is a conservative will be held to, you know, to not only the letter, they will pervert the letter of the law. And, you know, they'll turn your jaywalking into a capital offense. But that is how it's going to play out. The ends justify the means. They don't care about the harm they inflict upon you. It is necessary that they get rid of you. You, me, all of us. Yes, that means you and us. Anyway, another thing that because I was asked earlier, and it came back around now, that JFK looks like he's going to go on to an independent ticket. And I mentioned, because I've told people, and I told this gentleman a little while ago, that gentleman, RFK Jr., not JFK, RFK Jr., is a diehard loyalist to the Democratic Party. He may not like the Democratic Party, but I believe he's an operative for the Democratic Party. He hasn't ever once, and as a matter of fact, he likes using what I think the libertarians like to chew on, the military-industrial complex and that type of stuff. He is a huge threat. RFK Jr. is an ideologue and an operative and is a huge threat. And what we're going to see in this upcoming election, and the reason I believe he's actually playing this out this way, is because, we've actually seen this historically, in 1906 with Teddy Roosevelt jumping in against Taft because Taft wasn't progressive enough to help Wilson become president. It's the same thing that happened in 1980 when Reagan actually stole the election out from underneath the globalists. I mean, here came a guy that actually was speaking and articulating the words that Americans wanted to hear. And they said, we can't have that. We're this close to actually getting our next globalist in. Nixon was, they were all of them. From, Kennedy was an outlier. Kennedy was supposed to play along with the game. And he didn't. And so, they had to do something about that. So Johnson took over, and Johnson was a good little boy and did everything that he needed to do in putting up dominoes that would destroy America, like Medicare and so forth. And so when we saw Nixon come in, Nixon did the exact same thing. Cook is off the gold standard, seized control over pricing. And he did things that were actually unconscionable. And then Carter came in. Carter continued. They were positioning themselves to get ready to actually lower the boom sooner. But Reagan came along and put us, took us off that track, and actually it took a while for them to recover. And so that's why, if I'm telling you, in 1980, Bush was forced upon Reagan as his running mate. And go look at the details on Kemp, why Kemp was not selected, because Kemp had ghosts in his closet. They had pictures. They were going to, and they basically told Reagan, they said, you pick Kemp, you will not become president. We will actually do everything necessary to run you into the ground so that Carter would become reelected. And they explained to him over the course of a couple hours, the night before, Reagan had to pick his running mate. And lo and behold, Reagan picked Bush instead of Kemp. Everybody in the Reagan camp knew he was going to pick Kemp. And they were completely blown away and disappointed that he picked Bush, which set Bush up for his presidential run after Reagan's second term, so that Bush could lay into place the dominoes for the Agenda 21 and the globalist agenda. And so when we look at what ended up happening in 1992, because that was in 1988 when Bush became president, in 1992, when Bush was going to get reelected, he had to accept it. It was a done deal. Bush was going to be reelected. Even though Clinton was running in office, or Clinton was running as the Democratic nominee, there was no way Clinton was going to win. And as a matter of fact, Clinton didn't win. technically. It was the Electoral College that got Clinton in because Clinton actually had 39%. I remember the precisely what the numbers were, 39% of the popular vote. Now, historic numbers seem to have changed a little bit because it was really hard for the left to actually keep that out there because people like me kept on reminding everybody that Clinton didn't even get 40% of the vote. That's how much Perot took from Bush. And it was so bad, Clinton's favorability in the nation was so bad. Most people thought, oh no, he was one of the most loved presidents. Are you kidding me? I think it was 42% in 1996, but Perot had to run again to basically split the vote of the conservative America. So conservative America was still that dominant, and they didn't have an election system that they could literally steal the elections like they do today. They needed to move technology into place so that they could steal the elections and we'd be none the wiser, or at least those who, you know, just accept government as, you know, this perfect parent. And this is what I'm telling you, government is trying to kill us. And they're stealing the elections and they're doing everything. And all of these stooges, all of these idiots, these dolts that aren't questioning government and don't care about a self-governing system, all of them are culpable in the destruction of America. But I'm going through this, you know, how this all played out, because Perot was critical in 1996. And guess who was critical to basically keep Bush, or I should say Clinton, from becoming the president and making sure that Bush actually won that election? Remember how close it was? Bush was so unfavorable. They had to bring Ralph Nader in and actually legitimize Ralph Nader, who's out there. I mean, if you ever heard a wacko running for office, I mean, some of the stuff almost made sense, but then he would really start talking and expose just how crazy he was. He was a dangerous man, but he still was able to pull enough of the votes from the Democratic side that helped Bush barely squeak out that win. Right, folks? I mean, we all remember the 2000 election where it was going to boil down to possibly the use of force and so forth. And Clinton didn't want to get involved. The jurists didn't want to get involved. They knew that this kind of needed to go, you know, down this path, and the jurist actually ended up having to get involved to secure the election for Bush. So as we see this all playing out, the need for RFK Jr., want to get those acronym right, RFK, or the initials right, it's not JFK, RFK Jr., is actually playing to split not the Democratic vote, he is to split the Republican vote, which is why he is in this race. He wants to talk about, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, he would love to be the next Democratic president. And he would probably win if the Democratic Party was not as corrupt as they are. Oh, you really have to earn your dues to get into that seat. And so what he's doing is he's paying his dues now to help make sure in the 2024 election, this is hedging their bets to make sure that the outcome falls the way that they want it. I mean, it's that simple, folks. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.